Here we go. We are July 2nd, reading number 69. Time is 4:24 Hawaii time. And we are doing a Ion on Medicine reading, Carolyn and Ion with JW in between. Greetings, Ion.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. I'm somewhat ready here. I'm just trying to find my Medicine with Ion notes, which will be helpful. Okay, here we go.
We're very excited with your liver aspects.
Okay, good.
Let's start with the disconnection.
Okay.
There are cancers of the liver.
Yes, true. Yeah.
There are. Unlike others, you know, but things can very easily metastasize, or was that a new word?
No, you're not allowed to create a new word out of that. That's too phony.
Mastitization, maybe.
Yeah, right.
But anyhow, in its perfect world, the flow of the filter of the liver is very key because it sets into a precedent with your creatinine and your albumin and all those different functions that come normally from the kidney.
Mm.
But it also comes into play in the larger aspect of it would be the parallel to the oil filter of the car.
Mm.
Unlike the fuel filter, which would be parallel to the liver, to the kidneys.
Uh-huh.
See, one is running one type and the other is running the other. And the bile ducts that attach and that flow,
mm-hmm.
The liver is very key as it opens and it actually retracts and enlarges,
mm-hmm.
depending on the pressurization. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a lot of gunk, it gets a little larger and absorbs that and then actually works its way out to get rid of it. And then in a leaner span, it can actually get smaller to balance the production or the elimination of the bile out of that part of the system. It's an extra fine sieve or an oil filter.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you add huge, vast quantities of alcohol, or if you consistently keep your blood alcohol level elevated,
mm-hmm.
then that alcohol sort of tricks it into enlarging and doesn't let it constrict or get back to normal to equalize the pressure, and then that causes some cirrhosis,
uh-huh.
which is one of the bigger, one of the larger causes now that causes of what you call renal failure, liver failure.
Mm-hmm.
All those processes of just the same thing of a gut dying would be a way to parallel it. But there are things that you can do, you know, to help ease up that calcification and cirrhosis,
mm-hmm.
that don't allow it to close. They can't change that oil filter like they do in a car, but there are things that you can do to sort of extrapolate the goodness, get it back to working as good as it can, I guess is
mm-hmm.
the right way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty incredible. It's very important, but it's one that's attaches itself to the mainframe of even doing liver biopsies.
I don't know. Just explain that sentence. Attaches to the mainframe of doing liver biopsies?
Well, we were going on from the same side of paralleling the changing of an oil filter.
Right.
Can't change a liver.
Right.
But there are things that can be done that can help unstop a liver, if that's
yeah.
the way, right vernacular.
Right.
Or its function, to increase its function. Because you kill the liver, and then what happens is all the bile just passes through, and you poison yourself.
Yeah.
Short version.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like an oil filter, when it gets clogged, you just pop a new one in, and then you're good to go.
Right.
But the elimination process of that the filtration that gets it out of your system is what's pretty keen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, And the next eye, we did sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about scoliosis, I guess, the curvature of the back. Yeah. I don't know.
No. I won't let you go around to the back yet. You stay on track.
Yes, ma'am. But that aspect of this filter, it goes back to the parallel that we've used before. It's like the sink stopped up.
Mm.
We've done that with a lot of the colon, small and large intestines, and the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
It also is that same process of plumbing stopped up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little different because this would be like in your hot tub or your jacuzzi tub, the big tub with the jets that circulate.
Mm-hmm.
If they get funk in them and they get clogged up, then you can control the bubble factor. But you have to keep that process of flowing working. Otherwise, it just moves the dirty stuff around and around and around and around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that same aspect of why that's important. This connection, you see, with the alcohol consumption is that you're unhappy where you are.
Mm.
And the alcohol numbs you into a state of resistanceless.
Mm.
Put them in a car. Other people die, but they don't seem to because they're relaxed.
Mm.
They get up and walk out of the accident and killed 100 people, and they don't even remember what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's extreme, but the point of the alcohol consumption, which would have a... That's one of the negative effects of a long-term use of that particular thing. You don't have to. You can get drunk all your life and not get sclerosis of the liver.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, but you certainly can. But see, that we call it calcification, which is not exactly right, but it's a good example of that not where the liver won't function anymore as far as removing those bile and the poisons and toxins out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is it gets so sweet, meaning with alcohol levels, blood alcohol levels, that it numbs the liver just like it numbs the person.
Mm-hmm.
If they have problems or disconnection, that disconnection, then the alcohol seems to be the best, easiest way to deal with that to the point where they become resistance-less.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so does the liver.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and that's where that shows up as a disconnection. You know, you've run your engine too hot, so your muffler will fall off.
Get to know more about the liver becomes resistance-less. So
yeah,
the alcohol
makes the liver not function properly, a la sclerosis of the liver.
But the resistance-lessness, what does that mean? It implies that the liver would work better because it doesn't have resistance.
Well, it means that it works more fluid because it's so rich with the alcohol-laced blood.
Right.
You have a blood alcohol level that's increased.
Yeah.
The liver adapts to that higher concentration with the alcohol. So then you have all the, and it's not really the alcohol, it's the extra sugars that it just starts passing through. It doesn't get filtered and removed. That's when you start getting all these other issues, and then it affects your renal function, and then you can get jaundiced, and you know, there's all kinds of fallout that comes from that aspect of basically poisons that are natural in your system, you no longer have the ability. They just flow right through the pump, just like a hot tub.
Got it.
Perfect.
Good. Yeah.
And that's where that shows up of that disconnection. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a reason to dumb yourself out of something, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the only few places that it actually shows up is if you have an issue regarding it. But if you're going to drink. Okay, and if you're going to drink a lot, fine, wonderful. Just don't have the disconnection for it, and do it from the joy of the benefit from it, not because you have other problems that you don't want to deal with, so therefore this becomes the fastest path to your joy, because you're actually setting up the rules, and those rules then pull you into a position where you won't allow it to break your own rules, and then you end up with a dying liver.
Mm-hmm.
Or a liver that won't filter, which is the same as dead. It's
mm-hmm.
a pass-through.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Liver transplants are an issue because that filtration system that they do end up becoming the, you can no longer drink
mm-hmm.
because of the anti-resistance drugs, the immune suppressing drugs that kill this foreign liver. You can't take that with any alcohol, so you fix yourself in a place where if you get a new liver to live, you can't have alcohol to enjoy it with.
Right.
Which is very interesting to see that would be the side effect of that process. Well, that's why they really won't do it. Give those liver transplants to folks that are really have what I call alcohol issues that they're having to address, because they decide that it's not worth living if they can't have a drink.
Mm-hmm.
You see.
Mm-hmm.
When they take their problems to the bottle, now this is where J.W.'s granny would say, rarely do you find the answers to your problems in the bottom of a bottle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see. But, oh, they look. They look to the bottom of the bottle to see. And we're not pushing against anything. Please know that. We are not pushing. Alcohol is wonderful. It'll reduce a fever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Soaking in it, you know, the isopropyl method of reduction. Mm-hmm. It's a great antiseptic. It's a good diuretic. It sometimes can juice up your system to give it a little extra boost and basically raise the alcohol level, the blood alcohol level, and it just has some very wonderful balancing. Sorry?
A yawn. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were going to shoot us out of the water.
Oh, no, but get ready. I'm glad you're on your toes.
we're trying to come back and tell you all one more time how fabulously wonderful, how wonderful rye whiskey is, and rums, and
yes.
sambucas, and brandies, and cognac,
yeah.
vermouths, and all those wonderful things. They're in balance of moderation. They are absolutely appropriate. They're absolutely life-giving. If they indeed are the fastest path to your joy.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoying them from that aspect, there's not one single thing wrong with it at all. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And if those that get disconnected from themselves and they have to go to the AA meetings, and we're focusing this on alcohol, but there's lots of other aspects. This is just one. They can no longer have it. They've reached that point of no return. That they have to stay dry and sober and go to meetings with all the other disconnected ones to vindicate their disconnection of why they're less than, because they have to go to the meetings of their 12 steps. We could give you some more 12 steps, but that's for another day and for another book. But
mm-hmm.
the answer of that dynamic is, as long as it's in moderation, your moderation,
mm-hmm.
and as long as it doesn't break your rules,
mm-hmm.
then enjoy. Your body will naturally digest it, just as it will process sugars and complex carbohydrates and
mm-hmm.
roughage as far as kale uncooked. Please mm-hmm. yourself.
Yeah.
So, now, the other aspects that come with the filtration issues become a very tempered balance. It's a very interesting thing. The richness, now we'll go all the way into your uric acid, your gout,
mm-hmm.
and all those different aspects. Those are a very close parallel then to your liver as well.
Mm.
Meaning that flow of when that acid is moved,
mm-hmm.
which is a bad day or a good day. When it doesn't move, you're dying with gout. But when you get it cleared up, the inflammation out of that,
right.
it has to go somewhere. If the liver isn't at all out of balance or off, out of sync, maybe that's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
If that ever is the case, then that uric acid will tear liver up faster than anything.
I see.
Because the kidneys don't catch it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
They can process it, but they don't catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because see, the uric acid is something that's in your system that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when it gets stuck in those joints that causes great big issues.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't catch catch it, then it just flows, and it'll actually even help produce it, because the liver would say, oh, there's a lot of uric acid, slow down that production or throw some out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that be the case, see, it doesn't do that, especially if it's stopped up. It thinks that you need more.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll allow more to be produced and flow through.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a toxin, which it picks up immediately. That's the big issue with your acetaminophen and all these new fancy synthetics that they're producing. They, all these drugs that they're compounding, they all have a half-life.
Mm-hmm.
And the half-life is what is detrimental to the liver and sometimes kidney, but mostly liver function.
Mm.
Some drugs that they give you, they'll even do liver productivity tests. See
uh-huh.
how your liver's doing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because, not because of the drug, because of the half-life of the drug.
Mm-hmm.
The same toxicity of what you call heavy metal poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Same aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But some drugs have a half-life that is eternal.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Arsenic.
Yeah.
There's no half-life to arsenic. Arsenic in the system is always in the system. You don't filter it. You don't get rid of it. It's absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they can dig you up 100 years later and see if you were poisoned with arsenic or strychnine.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the half-life issue.
Yeah.
Some of the compounds in what you call DDT,
mm-hmm.
which is also a rat poison type of situation the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that's quite critical and amazingly tastes delicious is something called antifreeze.
Ooh.
Antifreeze will kill you just dead as a hammer or cause you to transition.
Wow.
And it is delicious.
Wow.
It is absolutely delicious.
they
have to be very careful with it laying around because animals are actually attracted to it.
Oh, dear. Mm-hmm.
Now you would go through a moment of time and go, wait a second, Ion. How do you know that antifreeze tastes good?
Yeah.
But yet it does.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not suggesting you get a quart to taste,
mm-hmm.
but you could actually put it to your tongue and it wouldn't be very harmful, but you would be absolutely amazed.
Mm-hmm.
Xerox and Prestone have actually considered adding a degree of our element that would have a bad taste.
Yes.
For the animal things, and you know, it's like in natural gas they put an
additive. Yes.
So if you have a gas leak, you can smell it like rotten eggs.
Exactly.
Because gas doesn't smell bad.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but if they add that to it, then you can smell it, so you can do something before it goes to the lowest place, and you strike a match to see why it's so dark and kaplooey.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a very interesting thing, and that works. That'll put you into renal failure, not quite immediately, but pretty close.
Yeah, very interesting.
Pretty close, and it's just because of its half-life in the interaction with the liver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, did you want to deal with creatine and albumin
that gets into kidneys, but let's just see if I understand what the disconnection with liver ailments is.
Okay.
I don't think I get it yet.
Well, tell me what you think you got, and we'll clean it up.
The liver being a filter, then a person in their life is having trouble filtering the good and the bad and the ugly.
It's a good example, but we don't like the words.
Okay.
The filter's just a filter.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't know good, bad, or ugly.
Uh-huh.
But you do.
Yeah.
You do.
Filtering with your rules.
That's exactly correct. Mm. Those rules can have then a negative or positive effect, but the filter just filters.
Okay.
It doesn't even ask what kind of blood it is. It doesn't care the blood type. It doesn't care. It just filters. But your rules then set up a position to where it can't do this and can't do that, too much alcohol and then this and that, this and that. Next thing you know, And you take 27 acetaminophen three times a day, and all with half-lives and issues and problems, and no, which they've already told you, you were taking twice the maximum daily dose, so, and the maximum dose will kill you, so it's backed off a little bit from there, and then you get into your naproxen and naproxen and all those that are Aleve would be the over-the-counter aspirin, but naproxen, some people call it, but it's old-timey naproxen. You can call it what you want to. But most of those type drugs are just really, really nasty on the liver. But you trade it off, the Celebrex. You trade it off. The Celebrex is leading cause for liver failure. But some people take it because if they can't walk, if they have such pain in their knees, they don't want to live anyway. So it's an exchange ratio, like when you're doing your starches and your complex carbohydrates.
You can
exchange, like, well, I really want a piece of cake, so I'm going to have no potatoes if I'm balancing my nutrition, you see.
Nothing
wrong with either one, but if you're going to do both, you'll break your rule, and then the pyramid is broken.
Right.
It's kind of a tragic joke anyway, but regardless.
So back to Celebrex, some people take it and allows them to walk, so it's an exchange, trade-off. Okay, good.
And worth it. And they're taking years off their life, but they're thinking, well, great, so I'm going to live an extra 5 years in a nurse bedridden in a nursing home. That's about as much fun as a stick in the eye. So I'd rather play the drug game and get the best that is, you see. So that's that negotiating and looking for a reason. Because remember, we don't fear death because there's not any. Okay, and that transitional then comes into play as well. So we dealt with the alcohol aspect, and that's a choice. Then we dealt with the drug aspect. That's also a choice that sometimes you have with the AMA helping you along because you want to dance like a kid again. And who even knows what the fallout for all these erectile dysfunction drugs that nobody keeps control of what they're doing and how they're taking them and what. You know, it's like the old-timey amyl nitrate. After a little while, you can't function at all, and you certainly can't produce if you're going to do sniffing things that raise you into an erection or relax you into intercourse. You see what I'm saying? The same thing is that same aptitude, okay, of that process. So if you're not propped on it and it doesn't break any rules, then absolutely enjoy every bit of it that is. But if not, then you've either got to do one of two things. You've got to amend the rules.
Okay.
Or you got to suffer the consequences. So we're not saying you can't do it. We're saying you got to amend your rules.
Very good.
And then guess what? The liver reproduces itself every 4.5 years.
Okay.
You have a whole new liver. Every 4.5 years. And isn't it interesting? If you have alcohol issues, you basically, it stops that reproduction aspect of the replenishing of its own filtering cells.
Right.
To the point where you have the liver of an 80-year-old. And the reason that they say that is because the liver isn't reproducing itself the way it should in the filtration system. And so therefore it ages. Which is an interesting dynamic, because that's what the oil of Olay is supposed to prevent, is it not?
Yeah.
Well, same thing is true in your liver. Curtailing that, going back into a not quite so rich of diet can help the nutrition of the liver help recreate its own cellular structure. Now, oh my God, we're nervous, we're scared, we're concerned. One of the big things that helps this more than anything is your magnesium.
Good.
It's a very key element, because that mixed along with approximately 75 to 200, well, I think they're in milli equivalents of zinc.
Milligrams, probably.
Milligrams, but like the potassium C, sometimes they'll put in milli equivalents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So depending on how you get it, but grams, milligrams are great. That's fine. But now you're not talking about overdosing on it, but you're talking about that added into it, just as you have sometimes when folks are on are type 2 diabetic and they have a wound,
mm-hmm.
they'll add zinc, pretty hefty amount of zinc, which allows the body to naturally heal itself
mm-hmm.
faster, especially if you have the rule that says if you have type 2 diabetes, you can't heal, so therefore you just have to cut it off, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing is true in that liver world. And another really key effect that comes once you get this extended liver disease,
mm-hmm.
sodium has a nasty, 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 nasty side effect because it cures, as in keeps as a preservative.
Uh-huh.
So it'll keep the liver where it was.
Huh.
Many people coming off of the alcohol thing and have a damaged liver or medicine thing and have a damaged liver, they'll crave salt.
Huh.
It'll settle the stomach. It helps things work the way it's supposed to because you have all this extra poisons that the livers aren't working on.
Mm-hmm.
But what that actually does is that increases some of your pressure and your hypertension, blah, 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 blah. But mostly what it does is it keeps the liver right where it is.
Is that a good thing?
No, it's a bad thing if you have one that needs regenerating.
So it prevents it from being regenerated.
Yes, it preserves it as it is.
Yeah, it preserves it as it is. Mm-hmm.
And it also draws the fluid out of it, which that's what the whole liver function is supposed to do. It's supposed to be able to take the poisons out of your system in a filtering process. But if it's like a good diuretic and just pulling the fluid, it leaves the poisons in the liver. Do you see? It's the counteract. It would be the counteractive aspect. So you have to be very careful if you find yourself into that place
mm-hmm.
of your sodium intake.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to end in this magnesium really is keen on that whole cleaning up of those. So it helps move the poisons, the toxicity out of the system. It's what the magnesium, it binds with those poisons. Well, we don't even like that word, but they are poisons. I mean,
mm-hmm.
go figure.
Mm-hmm.
But they bind.
Yeah.
And in that binding, they actually change it and allow the body to naturally eliminate it. It actually gets moved to stool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very naturally.
Okay.
And so, is that enough on the liver? That was pretty good.
It's very good. And you know, I'm getting another nice feel for how to do the overview of, you know, this is what ION, sort of the ION medical philosophy. So it's this, either amend the rules or suffer the consequences.
Yes. And many do. You know why? Because they're not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not worthy, and that's the best they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find somebody having breakfast and they're eating burnt toast and rotten eggs,
mm-hmm.
You could just probably know they've got a tapeworm and the tapeworm doesn't deserve any better.
Oh.
And always a little car, but never hurt anything.
Right. Okay, cool. Would you like to move on to menopause?
Yes. It has everything to do with the men.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Why? There's men just sitting right in there causing all those problems.
And then it rolls all into a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
A hysterectomy.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah, there's just lots. And you have to have a manogram. And there's then all those other dynamics that you come into that with the menopause. That is the part when the body, you think we're going to say female, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to say both, because all cycle.
Mm-hmm.
All cycle. And it has to do with the environment, believe it or not. And here we can show you the science.
Mm-hmm.
You can take five women, okay,
mm-hmm.
and you put them in the same household,
mm-hmm.
and you let them live within the same household.
Right.
And in a matter of 3 to 5 months, no more,
mm-hmm.
they'll all be on the same cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, how is that? It's the natural flow of your environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like lights on, lights off, eating time, sleeping time, bathing time. Just that it's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full-run cycle. And it's when then the body, the female body, then has a bloody flux that allows that to clear,
mm-hmm.
to make room for new eggs to be ready for fertilization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just is a clearing process. Otherwise, you don't want a dusty old uterus that's not going to conceive.
Mm-hmm.
So blood is a very wonderful way of clearing that process.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And some have terrible times and cramps and issues and problems. Others don't.
Mm-hmm.
They've been on the birth control so long now that they wouldn't know what normal is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Or you could be a good Catholic and do the cycle method, and that's how all the Catholics keep increasing, is because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't really work that way.
Mm-hmm.
But menopause begins typically when folks come into a stage of their life when they are wanting to go to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
They've had their children and now they're ready for grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
They've had their babies and they've raised them and they're done. Okay,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their body will naturally adjust and correct itself to where those eggs don't fertilize.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And it's not that those eggs are gone, because if you have your ovaries, you're always producing the estrogen, which is very, 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 very incredibly important. Or you better have the right air conditioning, man, because you're going to be so hot and cold and cold and hot and grumpy and irritable and blah, 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 to the point that it becomes too much testosterone, and then you have all kinds of other issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because your rule then becomes you're no good as a woman anymore, so therefore you might as well be no longer testicularly challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So those are why those side effects are so far out. See, some have a little and some grow beards and, good
mm-hmm.
gracious, just do all kinds of crazy things. But it's just that natural imbalance of those hormone balancing agents.
Mm-hmm.
When the body finally says, okay, done, then they cease to cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. No issue, no problem. It's sometimes they go through what they call the change.
Mm-hmm.
And now, men folk do the identically exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Exact same thing, only it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Same process, but it's a little different. As their ejaculate lessens, which it doesn't, by the way, unless it's the rule, then
mm-hmm.
what happens is they can have erections and then come to completion of enjoying a sexual experience, but in that process, there's not as much tenacity regarding release or the orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go longer and longer and longer and not notice it.
Mm-hmm.
But see, you know, you're 18 years old and you're just one orgasm waiting to be.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Whereas in women folks, typically, we're talking about sexuality here, which has to do with the cycling process, has to do with women folks normally become what you call better lovers in their middle ages.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, it takes a while to figure out how, what it is they even want. You know, and how the whole thing works. So that balance, you see, is what sort of works that all out. Otherwise, all the babies would be born when women are 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
See? Because they're just at the point of getting into the notion that this might be appropriate and fun. Now, the healthier sex life is, the later your menopause comes. Now you're saying, but now wait a minute, that's pretty significant. The happier your sex life is, the later the menopause comes.
Right. Well, yeah, that's a generalization, but...
But now wait.
It just keeps the hormones circulating and flowing and all that.
And they balance themselves.
Yeah.
The yin and the yang of that process.
Yeah.
But you start having lots of children, and lots of times plumbing gets tangled up, and then the next thing you know, oh, honey, you've got to have a partial hysterectomy. You got to. You got to. And then you have a hemorrhoid. There's another hem. And a hemorrhoid and a hysterectomy, and all your problems are hems. But even so, they're easy to do that, you see. Because that once you start becoming fertile, and then, well, that's when the easiest time to get pregnant is right after you've had one. It's amazing, because see, all of your body is ready to go back into the cycle mode. Your eggs are screaming for fertilization. But yet you can't get pregnant when you're pregnant. Imagine that. But you have to be very, 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 because you are just very, 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 very fertile after birth. It's just very normal. Something about the lining up the cervix, pick a number, but it just seems to work that way. But anyhow, the generalization of the happier the fullness of your experience then delays the ceasing of your cycles. And so if that's your big concern, then engage in lots and lots and lots of intercourse. Now, what's lots and lots and lots of intercourse? That's 3 to 4 times a week in a 7-day cycle. That's a lot of intercourse as you age. But no, now, others would say, wait a second, it's taken me 40 years to convince my wife that if we don't have sex every day, that I will die. You have to work really hard to create this meme that they can actually buy into and go, well, I really don't think I want to have sex with my husband tonight, but I really don't want to lose him either, so I guess we might as well, But it's this dynamic. Men folks go through the same cycle. The timing is off just a little bit. Meaning, typically men folks would want to have a release. If they're normal or average, every 3 days, typically in a 3-day cycle, that becomes normal. Because, and except those with the vasectomies, but now all that's got to go somewhere. So that's a whole other issue, but we'll get to these soon enough. But the natural flow of that is the correct production of testosterone, and men folks have a little estrogen too. Now, don't confuse that, because they do.
I know.
They have to. You got to have the bitter with the sweet. And those productions would also have lower testosterone, of course, would make a diminished sex drive. And also have a diminished sperm count. But now, ejaculate has nothing to do with sperm except for the fluid from which it is transferred. They're not the same. But the cycle that comes into place is anytime that gets out of balance, then they fall under the same process. So it normally runs...
Under the same process, you mean a menopause? Okay.
Exactly. Except their cycles are different. They run, women folks would normally go 3 weeks, and then have a cycle for 3 to 5 to 7 days, depending. But it's a monthly thing, okay? Unless they get the acne-correcting birth control pill, and then they don't have to have it for a year.
It's
amazing what that's all doing, recreating how the universe creates it all, and they've changed it with one little pill. What a wonderful creator you must be. Men folks go 4 weeks, okay? And now this is a normal sex-driven male. Not, you know, no steroids, no nitrates, no beta blockers. You know, we're talking about normal. people will go 4 weeks and then they cycle for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And that cycle is when they are distracted and or easily, more easily irritable. They're more agitated. And now here's how this shows up. Typically with the men folks, if they, now this isn't like your household because you run your household on that side, because Bob doesn't know or care. He's so happy he doesn't notice.
Yeah.
But in other places where men folks are responsible for taking care of this, you know, the bills and the stuff and the cares of life and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Notice those, that first of the month comes, and that first of the month is when everything has to go out. That's when the men folks just sort of change.
Ah.
See, that sharpness and their irritability, you think of, oh, well, the mortgage is due and the house payment's due and the car insurance is due and the taxes are due, and the due is due, and the due is due, and that stuff. And they would feel those extra pressures. Not that at all.
Mm-hmm.
It is the decreased production of testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're on the 3-week cycle.
And, well, does that decrease of testosterone just happen to come right when the bills are due?
Can, it's just like putting women folks in the same household. They'll start cycling together. But men rarely cycle the same times their wives do.
Good. That's a help.
Well, they'd be a lot more, they'd be a whole lot more, what do you call it?
Suicides and homicides.
Homicides.
Yeah.
Homicides. In the home, it'd be a homicide.
Homicide, yeah.
Homicidal tendencies.
So, what, and I guess I just don't understand what does cause the decrease in testosterone production. Is that just the cycle?
You can't run full out all the time.
Yeah.
You run full out all the time, guess what happens? You've got to have some place from the way the scrotum is attached to the body, that heat exchange, to allow sperm to be developed or grown that allows enough ejaculate to be made available.
Mm-hmm.
You see, many times men folks are not fertile and they have an incredibly high sperm count, but they have a very tiny, small amount of ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because of the fluid, the sperm fluid,
seminal
fluid,
right.
If it's lower to such a degree, then that comes into a whole other aspect, you see, of that process. So you got to have a downtime to regroup.
But, and that's all they need in 1 month, even if they're doing a regular intercourse or ejaculation 3 or 4 times a week?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And it's the same if they only have intercourse once a month.
Yeah.
See, the amount... We would say quality, not the quantity. But if you're in that normal process, then you're going to have a more balanced amount of ejaculate, which is approximately, you know, a couple of teaspoons if you're if you're well hydrated, but as little as, you know, a half a teaspoon.
Mm-hmm.
But that amount is based upon the whole process of this normal bonding process, you see.
Bonding,
male-female.
Oh, yeah.
Bonding. And it's also the very best example of two people, two meat sacks coming together, becoming as one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect example of the physical, non-physical, physical coming as one.
Oh.
Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Bob knows how to piss you off in 2.3 seconds, does he not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you know how to get right up Bob's nose in 2.3 seconds, do you not?
Right.
and it's almost like it's fun to fight sometimes because it's fun to make up, but but in the same process, it's still that yin and yang balancing of the complementary part of each other.
Right.
You, as a female, see the very best that is your husband. You also, quicker than anyone else on the planet, know those imposing limitations that even though you sometimes impose them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that's the part that shines. The imperfection would shine.
Oh.
And you either get over that or you embrace it and go, well, that's just the way it is. And Bob is never going to understand why my haircut is important.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, he might. He's probably the only one on the planet that would probably notice, but most men folks don't notice. You know, they don't know why it's even important.
You see
the whole process, and if you ceased exfoliating the hair off your legs, they would probably notice that, but they could go a week without shaving, and you're supposed to understand.
Mm-hmm. or vice versa.
That's correct. Exactly correct. So, but you see that's that exact complimenting. It was like, well, honey, you know, you haven't shaved your legs. Well, honey, you haven't shaved your beard, and it's pretty nasty and raspy.
Mm-hmm.
And I will if you will, and if not, we'll just see how this all works out. You see.
Mm-hmm.
But that oneness that comes together, then you know what Bob wants before Bob knows what he wants.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that becomes key. And also, here's the other fallout of that process. You, after years, you start looking like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it environment or is it heredity? We don't know, but look at somebody that's been married a very long time. They start looking alike.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, their physical features start mirroring each other.
And why is that? Can you, I have some ideas, but what do you think?
Well, here's the way it is. The non-physical physical that you do within yourself is the perfect example of coming into a oneness with another human being.
Mm-hmm.
The non-physical part of you that's sleeping with the non-physical part that's him becomes the same non-physical. And it's the same perfect example that the Christian church tries to portray with having Jesus live in your heart. Then after a while, you start acting like Jesus.
Wow.
Okay? And that's a wonderful thing if that's what you're achieving or arriving to the place of learning how to love and be a lover who loves and forgiving everybody and all the martyred saints that go along with that and the Hippocratic apostolic faith and doctrine that goes along with that, but we're not pushing against anything. We're just using it as an example to sort of marry. Okay, another good example of that, like with the Jewish people, many of them have the same similar basic attributes. Lots of them start looking alike, especially those in this tribal order of oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they're in line with that tribal placement of importance, the more they take on those characteristics of looking alike.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a stretch, because now that's a whole genotype, and we're not trying to start any...
Yeah, we might not be given that example.
Yeah, well, fair enough, but it is an example.
Okay. Right. Now, I want to go back to this... the non-physical of me sleeping with the non-physical of him becomes the same non-physical. That's pretty heavy.
It is pretty heavy, and it's that perfect example. It's that perfect example of the same job you're trying to do to take on, of having a seamless connection. You get so close with the male and the female. Well, now, let's don't leave anybody else out, because there's lots of those that are learning love that happen to find themselves in lesbian relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what you call homosexuality, or what do you call the men folks that men folks sleep with? I guess they're just homosexuals, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or gay, or happy, or whatever it is you call it. That same thing is true there. If they're together long enough, they start taking on the same looks.
Mm-hmm. I got that. So, but
okay.
What about
now,
the non-physical of one and the non-physical of another are the same non-physical? I mean, that's...
They become the merging of coming together. Let's do male-female, just because that's heterosexual is easier to work with.
Right.
Okay. You have, you're so close physically that you can't help but become close spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that spiritual closeness can cause you to pay attention to the things that you're constantly correcting or adjusting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the flaws, the cracks, the porcelana gets chipped away, you see, because they see you with your hair all up, you know, all over the place, and, you know, in the normalcies of everyday living in life.
Right.
And so those attributes of the loving experience then becomes a way to accept anyway, lover of mine that I love. The fastest path of my joy becomes your happiness. Now wait, now that doesn't mean that the husband's holding the wife responsible for his happiness. No, no, if the individual choice is the fastest path to my personal joy is enjoying your happiness, you've not broken any rule. Okay, now that non-physical, the lover that loves, the one that loves you unconditionally no matter what, that loves you even if all your teeth get knocked out, or that loves you if all your hair falls out, or if your teeth do fall out, you know, after time. So, you know, if that's a deal breaker, then you might better reconsider the whole process, because it may not be that way always, you say. All right? So now, and it might be if you get more than 99 pounds, I'm sorry, I'd hope for so much more, I'm moving on down the road, because that's the one that'll come into a position where they're 215 pounds, and the women folks get heavier than the men folks, and it's just a whole new day. It just depends on how all that sort of works itself out.
Back to non-physical, non-physical.
That is non-physical, non-physical. Non-physical, non-physical can love the mate as they change.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Okay.
Men folks don't ever want their brides to change. And they do. Women folks set out their whole life to change their mates, and they don't. You see, it's a wiring issue. But that wiring issue, the only way this could work is if there's a non-physical part of the female and a non-physical part of the male that can accept those changes and unchangeabilities that make space for them individually. And when that happens, then there is a cohesive bond. Now, we're not talking about gold on the finger, because that won't do it, you see. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the dynamics that come into the place of that your joy is wrapped into your relationship with your soulmate. Soulmate, if you find your soulmate, there's not much room for divorce. Soulmate means the mate, the soul. Hook up
there
with
you
the soul
go.
Hook up.
Yeah.
There's nothing they could do. The male could go off and have intercourse with a stripper at a titty club, and the wife might not be real happy about it, but that's not a deal breaker for a soulmate. But then men folks get caught in that position. They would be going in the door with their buddies or their friends or whatever to have intercourse at the titty
club. We can just call them affairs, okay?
Oh, okay. We'll be graphic.
Yeah, we don't need the graphics. I just have to edit it all out.
Oh, sorry. But it's all great fun. But they'll be the one going into the house of ill repute.
Okay.
And would get on their cell phone before they went in and call their bride and say, "Honey, we're out and about and we're having a great time and it's all fun. But I must tell you now, we're fixing to go into a house of ill repute. And I really love you very much, and I don't feel comfortable going here without your prior knowledge that I'm even thinking of going here." Now, guess what? Men folks that had the tenacity to have such a conversation with their bride, guess what the bride's more likely than not to do? Say, "Well, honey, go ahead, and we all know that you love me, and we know that I would never hold anything back from you to make your happiness any limited or in question of my veracity, of my love for you. So you just go have a really good time, and I trust you to always keep me in the highest priority of our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you see what happens is it's a whole new dynamic. Now the fella's like going, well, damn, she gave me permission. I can't do this.
Yeah, it's no fun anymore. But
it's no, the mystique has been removed.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct. But now, when you get the right soulmate situation going, guess what? All of a sudden, that is absolutely the short version of how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
The men folks know what are going to piss their wives off. The ladies folks know what are going to piss their husbands off.
Wow.
And there becomes that yin and yang balance of that reality. And you know if you're going to send a husband to go do the laundry, that everything's going to come out pink, or
mm-hmm.
you're going to pour 2 gallons of bleach in a thing, unless that's something that they're attuned with and do and don't have a problem with, or folding clothes or mopping floors, pick a poison. But that whole process, you see, of the balance from the environment and the heredity and the non-physical parts that can make that work perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Perfectly, and both then can cycle, and they both go through what you call menopause. Isn't that where we started some time ago?
Yeah, I just had to look up, what the heck are we talking about? Okay, fine.
It brings back to the menopause that both the male and the female can enter into their stage, if they both agree, is the right time to go through what you call the change.
Uh-huh.
And when you go through the change, guess what that does? It changes the what change. You go through the change.
Mm-hmm.
You go through the change. Guess what that changes? It changes your ability to go from the mother, the nurturing mother. You're always the mother, but the nurturing mother,
right,
into the loving, all-encompassing, agape, loving grandmother.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's what that's about, because otherwise, It would be constantly a competition.
Mm, with whom?
Daughter, mother, daughter, grandchildren.
Okay, yeah.
Because it is a very territorial thing.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really, really is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Meaning the pheromones alone will do you.
Yeah, good point. Okay.
And now, because that is a part of it, you see.
Uh-huh.
But now, we're not talking about like dogs and cats laying together and all that kind of stuff. That's the
too graphic, other, right?
That's the other version. Because we're not talking about the prostituted version. We're talking about natural, normal, loving, appreciating. Coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And once you come together, then the joys that you experience, whether it be playing golf together, whether it be swimming together, whether it be intercoursing together, whether it be sleeping together. A lot of folks that live together, look at Dorothy and Mr. Baxter, that had children and had a house, but they lived in twin beds.
Mm.
Back in the day when they lived in twin beds.
Oh, did they? Oh, my gosh.
And the Lucy Show, they had twin beds, but that's just because TV couldn't have male and female sleeping together in the same bed, or they didn't have 1 foot on the ground. But many folks had twin beds because they were more comfortable separate.
Uh-huh.
But they were getting together sometime.
I hope. Uh-huh.
Well, of course. But you see, the point is, though, that closeness or togetherness, and now you had to have a California king-size bed for 200-pound people because there's not enough room otherwise. So you have, 8 feet both ways, so you have a place to sleep, which is just amazing. But how that whole thing is changing. And your own individual mattresses, because your numbers are separate from side to side. But the sleeping aspect, because that's what you do more than anything else, is sleep
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
So that closeness alone, it'd be very significant in the coming together aspect of a mated, soul-mated relationship.
Mm-hmm. Very good. That was fun.
That was fun. It's been, we got a few more dynamics, I think, than you were asking, but it seemed like a real good place because we just didn't know when orgasm would fall into the category of a disease.
Yeah. Who knew? Okay, well, we have actually I think we've done well. We've done our hour, and Mr. Bob wanted to have a word with Ion.
Well, okay, what's our next topic? So we got leave us hanging on the menopause.
Well, there is menstrual pain, dysmenorrhea.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, is that the next layer?
It's kind of in the next alphabetic layer. Then there's mononucleosis and multiple sclerosis.
Oh, okay.
We won't wallow in the menstrual complaints for too long.
Great. But that whole pain is the cramping process of when you are withdrawn. Here's why you have those problems with menstrual pain and cramping.
Yeah.
You've made another cycle and you didn't get pregnant.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that's the disconnection.
Mm-hmm.
And now they all blame this on Eve, because in the Garden of Eden she got tangled up with the snake. But meat snakes are the problem for everybody, I guess. But she got tangled up with snakes, so therefore the curse was that she would have much travail in labor and would monthly have a cycle in which she would bleed for her egregious disconnection from source. And that rule then set into play, and so you had great travail in childbirth, and you had a monthly cycle that would be potentially devastating. Because apparently up until that point they didn't bleed. But y'all make the rules. You're the creator. So if you buy into that process, that's the case. J.W.'s wife had her babies natural, and her longest labor, even with her first, was about 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And piece of cake, hey, no epidural, no nothing, just straight.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't have to be all this disconnect business and pain and... She went from fingertip to 10 centimeters in an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. Good girl.
Yep. And so if that's the case, then we would be complete. And bring my Bob.
Okay, let me just go on down through the bowels of our beautiful house. See, we've had a nice little rainstorm while we were talking.
Oh.